I am a bad mother. The words reverberate around my mind as I stare down at the floor and the small red stain blemishing the white carpet beneath my feet. It is new, this carpet, laid only a year ago when I'd finally had enough of the original dull red. At least it would hide the blood better. The thought is unbidden, horrific, and I push it away. I close my eyes, trying to regulate my breathing. In, one, two, three. Out, one, two, three. Inhale, exhale. The next thought is louder, so loud it makes my heart skip a beat. She's done it again. I'm too late. I push open the bathroom door, knowing deep down what I will find. There is a distinct lack of urgency. My body feels heavy, and my movements are slow as I step inside to find what I have been expecting to find for almost a year. The body of my daughter. As soon as I see her, her eyes closed, one hand dangling over the edge of the bath, blood dripping from her fingertips, my heart speeds up, beating so hard that I start to feel dizzy. Sweat prickles along my forehead. My jaw clenches so tightly I hear a crack. And then, movement. Her fingers twitching, a low moan coming from her lips. She is alive. She is alive. Isabel, I say, rushing towards her, dropping to my knees beside the bath. Isabel, wake up! I press my hand over her wrist to stop the bleeding, though the wound is not too deep. I have learned how to tell. I reach over and grab her other wrist, and here, the wound is deeper. She is right-handed, and she must have cut her left wrist first, the razor opening the skin like a hot knife through butter. Blood is pulsing out of it, coating my fingers. She moans again, her eyes flickering. I'm going to call an ambulance, I tell her, letting go of her left wrist and fishing in my back pocket for my phone. It's going to be okay, darling. You're going to be fine.
It's all for attention, Michael said when Isabel first started cutting. A cry for help. She'll grow out of it.
But shouldn't we be answering her cry for help? I thought, but didn't say. He had already gone back to reading the newspaper, his glasses balanced on the end of his nose, while Alicia made hot chocolate for her younger sister, and I perched on the armchair, my hands clasped between my knees, feeling out of my depth. That was the first time. I am still out of my depth now. This is our second hospital visit in the past 12 months, each cry for help getting more and more serious. This time, Isabel has swallowed a pack of the amitriptyline I was prescribed for insomnia a few years back, as well as cutting her wrists, and so the pace is faster this time. The hospital corridors whizzing past as I run alongside the stretcher on which my daughter lays, wishing Alicia was here. Glad she doesn't have to see it this time.
You'll need to wait here, a nurse says, holding a hand up in front of her.
I stop as if she has activated an invisible shield, blocking me out. I watch Isabel disappear through the double doors, my hands clenching and unclenching at my sides. The nurse's eyes soften as our gaze meets.
Just take a seat here. We'll keep you updated.
And then she is gone in a flash of blue uniform and rubber-soled shoes that squeak on the polished floor. I sit in the hard-backed chair, picking at a groove in the armrest, thinking of Isabel's last words to me as the ambulance flew down the motorway, blue lights flashing. There's a photo. They shared it. Everyone's seen it. A photo? What kind of photo? I get my phone out, tap on Alicia's number, then put it down again. Michael is in Italy on a business trip. He only left yesterday and isn't due back for another 5 days. What time is it there? What time is it here? The clock on the wall reads 4:16 p.m. 4 plus 1 plus 6 equals 11. 1 plus 1 equals 2. The same as Isabel's life path number.